This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Mortal Instruments, Book 5, City of Lost Souls, by Cassandra Clare. Read by Molly Quinn.
No man chooses evil because it is evil. He only mistakes it for happiness, the good he seeks. Mary Wollstonecraft. Prologue. Simon stood and stared numbly at the front door of his house. He'd never known another home. This was the place his parents had brought him back to when he was born. He had grown up within the walls of the Brooklyn row house. He played on the street under the leafy shade of the trees in the summer and had made improvised sleds out of garbage can lids in the winter. In this house, his family had sat Shiva after his father had died. Here he had kissed Clary for the first time. He had never imagined a day when the door of the house would be closed to him. The last time he had seen his mother, she had called him a monster and prayed at him that he would go away. He had made her forget that he was a vampire, using glamour, but he had not known how long the glamour would last. As he stood in the cold autumn air, staring in front of him, he knew it had not lasted long enough. The door was covered with signs, stars of David splashed on in paint, the incised shape of the symbol for Chi, life. Tefillin were bound to the doorknob and knocker. Ahamsa, the hand of God, covered the peephole. Numbly he put his hand to the metal mezuzah affixed to the right side of the doorway. He saw the smoke rise from the place where his hand touched the holy object, but he felt nothing. No pain. Only a terrible empty blackness rising slowly into cold rage. He kicked the bottom of the door and heard the echo through the house. "Mom!" he shouted. "Mom, it's me!" There was no reply. Only the sound of the bolts being turned on the door. His sensitized hearing had recognized his mother's footsteps, her breathing. But she said nothing. He could smell acrid fear and panic even through the wood. "Mom!" his voice broke. "Mom, this is ridiculous! Let me in! It's me, Simon!" The door juddered as if she had kicked it. "Go away!" Her voice was rough, unrecognizable with terror. "Murderer! I don't kill people!" Simon leaned his head against the door. He knew he could probably kick it down, but what would be the point? "I told you, I drink animal blood!" "You killed my son," she said. "You killed him and put a monster in his place!" "I am your son. You wear his face and speak with his voice, but you are not him! You're not Simon!" Her voice rose to almost a scream. "Get away from my house before I kill you, monster!" "Becky," he said. His face was wet. He put his hands up to touch it, and they came away stained. His tears were bloody. "What have you told Becky?" "Stay away from your sister!" Simon heard a clattering from inside the house, as if something had been knocked over. "Mom," he said again, but this time his voice wouldn't rise. It came out as a hoarse whisper. His hand had begun to throb. "I need to know. Is Becky there? Mom, open the door, please." "Stay away from Becky!" She was backing away from the door. He could hear it. Then came the unmistakable squeal of the kitchen door swinging open, the creak of the linoleum as she walked on it, the sound of the drawer being opened. Suddenly he imagined his mother grabbing for one of the knives. "Before I kill you, monster!" The thought rocked him back on his heels. If she struck out at him, the mark would rise. It would destroy her as it had destroyed Lilith. He dropped his hand and backed up slowly, stumbling down the steps and across the sidewalk, fetching up against the trunk of one of the big trees that shaded the block. He stood where he was, staring at the front door of his house, marked and disfigured with the symbols of his mother's hate for him. No, he reminded himself. She didn't hate him. She thought he was dead. What she hated was something that didn't exist. I am not what she says I am. He didn't know how long he would have stood there, staring, if his phone hadn't begun to ring, vibrating his coat pocket. He reached for it reflexively, noticing that the pattern from the front of the mezuzah, interlocked stars of David, was burned into the palm of his hand. He switched hands and put the phone to his ear. Hello? Simon? It was Clary. She sounded breathless. Where are you? Home, he said, and paused. My mother's house, he amended. His voice sounded hollow and distant to his own ears. Why aren't you back at the Institute? Is everyone all right? That's just it, she said. Just after you left, Maris came back down from the roof where Jace was supposed to be waiting. There was no one there. Simon moved, without quite realizing he was doing it, like a mechanical doll. He began walking up the street toward the subway station. What do you mean there was no one there? Jace was gone, she said, and he could hear the strain in her voice. And so was Sebastian. Simon stopped in the shadow of a bare-branched tree. But Sebastian was dead. He's dead, Clary. Then you tell me why his body isn't there, because it isn't, she said, her voice finally breaking. There's nothing up there but a lot of blood and broken glass. They're both gone. Simon, Jace is gone. Part 1. No Evil Angel. Love is a familiar. Love is a devil. There is no evil angel but love. William Shakespeare. Love's Labor's Lost. 2 weeks later. Chapter 1. The Last Council. How much longer will the verdict take, do you think? Clary asked. She had no idea how long they had been waiting, but it felt like 10 hours. There were no clocks in Isabel's black and hot pink powder puff bedroom, just piles of clothes, heaps of books, stacks of weapons, a vanity overflowing with sparkling makeup, used brushes and open drawers spilling lacy slips, sheer tights, and feather boas. It had a certain backstage at La Caja Full design aesthetic, but over the past 2 weeks, Clary had spent enough time among the glittering mess to have begun to find it comforting. Isabel, standing over by the window with Church in her arms, stroked the cat's head absently. Church regarded her with baleful yellow eyes. Outside the window, a November storm was in full bloom, rain streaking the windows like clear paint. Not much longer, she said slowly. She wasn't wearing any makeup, which made her look younger, her dark eyes bigger. 5 minutes, probably. Clary, sitting on Izzy's bed between a pile of magazines and a rattling stack of serif blades, swallowed hard against the bitter taste in her throat. I'll be back. 5 minutes. That had been the last thing she had said to the boy she loved more than anything else in the world. Now she thought it might be the last thing she would ever get to say to him. Clary remembered the moment perfectly. The roof garden, the crystalline October night, the stars burning icy white against a cloudless black sky, the paving stones smeared with black runes, spattered with ichor and blood. Jace's mouth on hers, the only warm thing in a shivering world. Clasping the Morgenstern ring around her neck, the love that moves the sun and all the other stars. Turning to look for him as the elevator took her away, sucking her back down into the shadows of the building. She had joined the others in the lobby, hugging her mother, Luke, Simon, but some part of her, as it always was, had still been with Jace, floating above the city on that rooftop, the two of them alone in the cold and brilliant electric city. Maris and Kadir had been the ones to get into the elevator to join Jace on the roof and to see the remains of Lilith's ritual. It was another 10 minutes before Maris returned, alone. When the doors had opened and Clary had seen her face, white and set and frantic, she had known. What had happened next had been like a dream. The crowd of shadow hunters in the lobby had surged towards Maris. Alec had broken away from Magnus, and Isabel had leaped to her feet. White bursts of light cut through the darkness like the soft explosions of camera flashes at a crime scene, as one after another, serif blades lit the shadows. Pushing her way forward, Clary heard the story in broken pieces. The rooftop garden was empty. Jace was gone. The glass coffin that had held Sebastian had been smashed open. Glass was lying everywhere in fragments. Blood, still fresh, dripped down the pedestal on which the coffin had sat. The shadow hunters were making plans quickly to spread out in a radius and search the area around the building. Magnus was there, his hands sparkling blue, turning to Clary to ask if she had something of Jace's that he could track him with. Numbly, she had given him the Morgenstern ring and retreated into a corner to call Simon. She had only just closed the phone when the voice of a shadow hunter rang out above the rest. Tracking? That'll work only if he's still alive! With that much blood, it's not very likely. Somehow, that was the last straw. Prolonged hypothermia, exhaustion, and shock took their toll, and she felt her knees give. Her mother caught her before she hit the ground. There was a dark blur after that. She woke up the next morning in her bed at Luke's, sitting bolt upright with her heart going like a trip hammer. Sure, she had had a nightmare. As she struggled out of bed, the fading bruises on her arms and legs told a different story, as did the absence of her ring. Throwing on jeans and a hoodie, she staggered out into the living room to find Jocelyn, Luke, and Simon seated there with somber expressions on their faces. She didn't even need to ask, but she did anyway. Did they find him? Is he back? Jocelyn stood up. Sweetheart, he's still missing. But not dead. They haven't found a body. She collapsed onto the couch next to Simon. No, he's not dead. I'd know. She remembered Simon holding her hand while Luke told her what they did know. That Jace was still gone, and so was Sebastian. The bad news was that the blood on the pedestal had been identified as Jace's. The good news was that there was less of it than they had thought. It had mixed with the water from the coffin to give an impression of a greater volume of blood than there had really been. They now thought it was quite possible he had survived whatever had happened. "But what happened?" she demanded. Luke shook his head, blue eyes somber. "Nobody knows, Clary." Her veins felt as if her blood had been replaced with ice water. "I want to help. I want to do something. I don't want to just sit here while Jace is missing." "I wouldn't worry about that," Jocelyn said grimly. "The Clave wants to see you." Invisible ice cracked in Clary's joints and tendons as she stood up. "Fine. Whatever. I'll tell them anything they want if they'll find Jace." "You'll tell them anything they want because they have the mortal sword." There was despair in Jocelyn's voice. "Oh, baby, I'm so sorry." And now, after 2 weeks of repetitive testimony, after scores of witnesses had been called, after she had held the mortal sword a dozen times, Clary sat in Isabel's bedroom and waited for the council to rule on her fate. She couldn't help but remember what it had felt like to hold the mortal sword. It was like tiny fishhooks embedded in your skin, pulling the truth out of you. She had knelt, holding it, in the circle of the speaking stars, and had heard her own voice telling the council everything. How Valentine had raised the angel Raziel, and how she had taken the power of controlling the angel from him by erasing his name in the sand and writing hers over it. She had told them how the angel had offered her one wish, and she had used it to raise Jace from the dead. She had told them how Lilith had possessed Jace, and Lilith had planned to use Simon's blood to resurrect Sebastian, Clary's brother, whom Lilith regarded as a son. How Simon's mark of Cain had ended Lilith, and they had thought Sebastian had been ended too, no longer a threat. Clary sighed and flipped her phone open to check the time. "They've been in there for an hour," she said. "Is that normal? Is it a bad sign?" Isabel dropped Church, who let out a yowl. She came over to the bed and sat down beside Clary. Isabel looked even more slender than usual. Like Clary, she'd lost weight in the past 2 weeks, but elegant as always in black cigarette pants and a fitted gray velvet top. Mascara was smudged all around Izzy's eyes, which should have made her look like a raccoon, but just made her look like a French film star instead. She stretched her arms out, and her electrum bracelets with their rune charms jingled musically. "No, it's not a bad sign," she said. "It just means they have a lot to talk over." She twisted the lightwood ring on her finger. "You'll be fine. You didn't break the law. That's the important thing." Clary sighed. Even the warmth of Isabel's shoulder next to hers couldn't melt the ice in her veins. She knew that technically she'd broken no laws, but she also knew the Clave was furious at her. It was illegal for a shadow hunter to raise the dead, but not for the angel to do it. Nevertheless, it was such an enormous thing she had done in asking for Jace's life back that she and Jace had agreed to tell no one about it. Now it was out, and it had rocked the Clave. Clary knew they wanted to punish her, if only because her choice had had such disastrous consequences. In some way, she wished they would punish her, break her bones, pull her fingernails out, let the Silent Brothers root through her brain with their belated thoughts. Sort of devil's bargain, her own pain for Jace's safe return. It would have helped her guilt over having left Jace behind on that rooftop, even though Isabel and the others had told her 100 times she was being ridiculous, that they had all thought he was perfectly safe there, and that if Clary had stayed, she would probably now be missing too. "Quit it," Isabel said. For a moment, Clary wasn't sure if Isabel was talking to her or to the cat. Church was doing what he often did when dropped, lying on his back with all 4 legs in the air, pretending to be dead in order to induce guilt in his owners. But then Isabel swept her black hair aside, glaring, and Clary realized she was the one being told off, not the cat. "Quit what? Morbidly thinking about all the horrible things that are going to happen to you, or that you wish would happen to you because you're alive and Jace is missing?" Isabel's voice jumped, like a record skipping a groove. She never spoke of Jace as being dead or even gone. She and Alec refused to entertain the possibility. And Isabel had never reproached Clary once for keeping such an enormous secret. Throughout everything, in fact, Isabel had been her staunchest defender. Meeting her every day at the door to the council hall, she had held Clary firmly by the arm as she'd marched past clumps of glaring, muttering shadow hunters. She'd waded through endless council interrogations, shooting dagger glances at anyone who dared look at Clary sideways. Clary had been astonished. She and Isabel had never been enormously close, both of them being the sort of girls who were more comfortable with boys than other female companionship. But Isabel didn't leave her side. Clary was as bewildered as she was grateful. "I can't help it," Clary said. "If I were allowed to patrol, if I were allowed to do anything, I think it wouldn't be so bad." "I don't know," Isabel sounded weary. For the past 2 weeks, she and Alec had been exhausted and gray-faced from 16-hour patrols and searches. When Clary had found out she was banned from patrolling or searching for Jace in any way until the council decided what to do about the fact that she had brought him back from the dead, she'd kicked a hole in her bedroom door. Sometimes it feels so futile, Isabel added. Ice crackled up and down Clary's bones. You mean you think he's dead? No, I don't. I mean, I think there's no way they're still in New York. But they're patrolling other cities, right? Clary put a hand to her throat, forgetting that the Morgenstern ring no longer hung there. Magnus was still trying to track Jace, though no tracking had yet worked. Of course they are. Isabel reached out curiously and touched the delicate silver bell that hung around Clary's neck now in place of the ring. What's that? Clary hesitated. The bell had been a gift from the Seelie Queen. No, that wasn't quite right. The Queen of the Fairies didn't give gifts. The bell was meant to signal the Seelie Queen that Clary wanted her help. Clary had found her hand wandering to it more and more often as the days dragged on with no sign of Jace. The only thing that stopped Clary was the knowledge the Seelie Queen never gave anything without the expectation of something terrible in return. Before Clary could reply to Isabel, the door opened. Both girls sat up ramrod straight, Clary clutching one of Izzy's pink pillows so hard that the rhinestones on it dug into the skin of her palms. Hey! A slim figure stepped into the room and shut the door. Alec, Isabel's older brother, was dressed in council wear, a black robe figured with silver runes, open now over jeans and a long-sleeved black t-shirt. All the black made his pale skin look paler, his crystal blue eyes bluer. His hair was black and straight like his sister's, but shorter, cut just above his jawline. His mouth was set in a thin line. Clary's heart started to pound. Alec didn't look happy. Whatever the news was, it couldn't be good. It was Isabel who spoke. How'd it go? She said quietly. What's the verdict? Alec sat down at the vanity table, swinging himself around the chair to face Izzy and Clary over the back. At another time, it would have been comical. Alec was very tall, with long legs like a dancer, and the way he folded himself awkwardly around the chair made it look like dollhouse furniture. Clary, he said. Gia Penhallow handed down the verdict. You're cleared of any wrongdoing. You broke no laws, and Gia feels that you've been punished enough. Isabel exhaled an audible breath and smiled. For just a moment, a feeling of relief broke through the layer of ice over all of Clary's emotions. She wasn't going to be punished, locked up in the silent city, trapped somewhere where she couldn't help Jace. Luke, who as the representative of the werewolves on the council had been present for the verdict, had promised to call Jocelyn as soon as the meeting ended, but Clary reached for her phone anyway. The prospect of giving her mother good news for a change was too tempting. Clary, Alex said as she flipped her phone open. Wait. She looked at him. His expression was still as serious as an undertaker's. With a sudden sense of foreboding, Clary put her phone back down on the bed. Alec, what is it? It wasn't your verdict that took the council so long, said Alec. There was another matter under discussion. The ice was back. Clary shivered. Jace? Not exactly. Alec leaned forward, folding his hands along the back of the chair. A report came in early this morning from the Moscow Institute. The wardings over Wrangel Island were smashed through yesterday. They've sent a repair team, but having such important wards down for so long, that's a council priority. Wards, which served, as Clary understood it, as a sort of magical fence system, surrounded Earth, put there by the first generation of shadow hunters. They could be bypassed by demons, but not easily, and kept out the vast majority of them, preventing the world from being flooded by a massive demon invasion. She remembered something that Jace had said to her, what felt like years ago. There used to be only small demon invasions into this world, easily contained. But even in my lifetime, more and more of them have spilled in through the wardings. Well, that's bad, Clary said. But I don't see what it has to do with. The Clave has its priorities. Alec interrupted. Searching for Jason Sebastian has been top priority for the past 2 weeks, but they've scoured everything, and there's no sign of either of them in any downworld haunt. None of Magnus's tracking spells have worked. Elodie, the woman who brought up the real Sebastian, Verlag, confirmed that no one's tried to get in touch with her. That was a long shot, anyway. No spies have reported any unusual activity among the known members of Valentine's old circle, and the Silent Brothers haven't been able to figure out exactly what the ritual Lilith performed was supposed to do, or whether it succeeded. The general consensus is that Sebastian, of course they call him Jonathan when they talk about him, kidnapped Jace. But that's not anything we didn't know.
So? Isabel said.
What does that mean? More searching? More patrolling? Alex shook his head.
They're not discussing expanding the search, he said quietly. They're deprioritizing it.
It's been 2 weeks and they haven't found anything. The specially commissioned groups brought over from Idris are going to be sent home. The situation with the ward is taking priority now. Not to mention that the council has been in the middle of delicate negotiations, updating the laws to allow for the new makeup of the council, appointing a new consul and inquisitor, determining different treatment of downworlders. They don't want to be thrown completely off track.
Clary stared.
They don't want Jace's disappearance to throw them off the track of changing a bunch of stupid old laws? They're giving up? They're not giving up. Alec, Isabel said sharply. Alec took a breath and put his hands up to cover his face. He had long fingers, like Jace's, scarred like Jace's were as well. The eye mark of the Shadow Hunters decorated the back of his right hand.
Clary, for you, for us, this has always been about searching for Jace.
For the Clave, it's about searching for Sebastian. Jace as well, but primarily Sebastian. He's the danger. He destroyed the wards of Alicante. He's a mass murderer. Jace is...
just another Shadow Hunter, said Isabel. We die and go missing all the time.
He gets a little extra for being a hero of the mortal war, said Alec. But in the end, the Clave was clear. The search will be kept up, but right now it's a waiting game. They expect Sebastian to make the next move. In the meantime, it's third priority for the Clave, if that. They expect us to go back to normal life.
Normal life? Clary couldn't believe it. A normal life without Jace?
That's what they told us after Max died, said Izzy, her black eyes tearless but burning with anger. That we'd get over our grief faster if we just went back to normal life.
It's supposed to be good advice, said Alec from behind his fingers.
Tell that to Dad. Did he even come back from Idris for the meeting?
Alec shook his head, dropping his hands.
No. If it's any consolation, there were a lot of people at the meeting speaking out angrily on behalf of keeping the search for Jace up at full strength. Magnus, obviously. Luke, Consul Penhallow, even Brother Zachariah. But at the end of the day, it wasn't enough.
Clary looked at him steadily.
Alec, she said. Don't you feel anything? Alec's eyes widened, their blue darkening. And for a moment, Clary remembered the boy who had hated her when she'd first arrived at the Institute. The boy with bitten nails and holes in his sweaters and a chip on his shoulder that had seemed immovable.
I know you're upset, Clary, he said, his voice sharp. But if you're suggesting that Iz and I care less about Jace than you do...
I'm not, Clary said. I'm talking about your Parabatai connection. I was reading about the ceremony in the Codex. I know being Parabatai ties the two of you together. You can sense things about Jace, things that will help you when you're fighting. So I guess I mean, can you sense if he's still alive?
Clary, Isabel sounded worried.
I thought you didn't...
He's alive, Alex said cautiously.
You think I'd be this functional if he weren't alive? There's definitely something fundamentally wrong. I can feel that much. But he's still breathing.
Could the wrong thing be that he's being held prisoner? Said Clary in a small voice.
Alec looked toward the windows, the sheeting gray rain. Maybe,